scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, to left corner to Aguila. Aguila in the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Hey, happy Stampede Monday. Let's get this hour of Flames Talk underway. It's Monday, July 7th with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe with wireless keypad solutions so you can control access to your home wherever you are. For more information, visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Steinberg and Vickers from our Groundworks downtown studio on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Text line is open. Hopefully you are feeling like interacting if you're listening live on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, because I do think this is one of those segments that really endears itself to interaction on the text line. Hello, Vix.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Good, man. How was your first Stampede weekend?
I was out of town.
So pretty tame.
No, I went to a wedding. It was an outdoor ceremony.
If you happen
to be curious.
I thought you wore the hat.
No, I didn't end up going and getting it.
I thought you were going to wear the Blake Coleman.
Well, and then it's like, I don't, what's the policy on, like, during the ceremony, you would have to take it off, I assume.
Yeah.
Out of respect, and then at the reception,
I know, like,
you
in
can't
the
wear it at the dinner.
I know,
table.
Like in the military, officers take their hat off, as soon as they're inside, and then as soon as they step outside, the hat goes right back on. That's like military doctrine.
I don't know if that applies to weddings or not.
Yeah, not sure about that. Anyway, welcome aboard. Glad to have you back, safe and sound from
Thank
the
you.
Wedding. And hopefully, if you're listening right now, live or on the podcast, hopefully you're having a great 2025 Stampede so far, and things have slowed down, as they do around the league. We're just approaching a week into free agency. It's been more than a week since the NHL draft. This is when the gearing down process typically begins around the league. You'll still have a smattering of signings here and there. You'll still have a smattering of re-signings and, you know, some minor moves as we move towards the eighth month of the year into August, so on and so forth. But because things are starting to slow down around the league, we're starting to get a little bit of a better feel on what this Flames roster is going to look like for the coming season. So over the next few days on Flames Talk, and this week on Flames Talk, before we hit a hiatus at the end of the week, we wanted to start looking ahead to next season and start projecting what some of these lineups might look like with the information that we have in our hands right now. So there are a few things that still need to be decided. I think Rasmus Anderson's future remains at the very top of that. Is Rasmus here come training camp? Is Rasmus playing with the Flames to start next year? I think you and I are of the same opinion that there is a decent chance that he'll be in a Flames jersey come September, October. Whether that's ideal or not, perfectly ideal, maybe not, but I think that there is a definite large possibility that he's a member of the Flames still once we hit the fall.
Yeah, and this is great timing for this conversation because I do have a story to file to the NHL. It's sort of an off-season update for the Flames, and one of the questions is, or one of the segments is, a projected lineup. And from my perspective, sitting here trying to hash out forward lines, D pairs, so on and so forth, is, yeah, Rasmus Anderson will be a part of that assignment. Will he be on that opening night roster when I have to do it again at the beginning of October? Who knows? But for me, it is the biggest roster question that remains. No disrespect to Connor Zeri, who remains a restricted free agent. That feels like it's just going to get done. That's one of those inevitabilities. So the real question is Anderson a part of this team come September, October?
And you mentioned Zeri's contract. I'm assuming Zeri's going to sign because I believe he will. I'm assuming that Anderson, for the sake of this conversation, I'm a whole lot less confident as to what's going to happen because it's still very much up in the air. But for the sake of the coming conversations, assuming Rasmus Anderson's going to be here, assuming Connor Zeri is going to sign, and look, does a trade happen? I know the Bowen Byram rumors have been
persistent.
Not there. They actually haven't been since July 1. They really haven't been persistent. But that gets thrown out there.
A week, yeah.
And people have been buzzing about it. And certainly it put a lot of Flames fans onto high alert about a player like that.
How about lingers?
Now we found it could linger. Yeah, for sure. We found out that Byram is now ineligible to sign an offer sheet because the team elected salary arbitration with him. So he is now no longer eligible for an offer sheet, but maybe a trade could still happen. But as it stands with the roster that is under contract and or that we assume will be under contract, you know, I'm assuming Sam Morton's going to sign. I'm assuming Zeri's going to sign, all that type of stuff. Let's start by projecting what these forward ranks look like. I'm curious as to where you are on the text line in terms of who should play with who and how things should slot. I've got a number of questions that I think will help us maybe come to some sort of consensus, you and I, on where people should fit on these forward ranks. It's a very, very unchanged group. Like, there is very little changeover with this forward group.
Take 10 seconds and run me through it, would you?
So out, Anthony Mantha, who barely played last year, and Kevin Rooney. In, nobody. There's not a new forward in the organization from the end of last season to where we are right now. Outside of the guys they drafted, but, you know, Reshny and Potter, for instance, the two first-round picks, won't be playing with the Flames this year.
Won't even be in camp.
Won't even be in main camp because they'll be both off to the NCAA, Arizona State for Cullen Potter, and year one at the University of North Dakota for Cole Reshny. So they won't be a part of it. So for the sake of this conversation, zero new forwards, and the only players out are Anthony Mantha, who signed with Pittsburgh, and Kevin Rooney, who is still an unrestricted free agent. So let's go through it, try to answer some of these questions along the way, and start to put things together. Did you map out?
I did.
A set of lines? Okay.
I did, yes.
As did I. And so maybe I'll start with this first question, and we'll see where it dovetails from there. Do you have Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau playing together to start the year, and do you believe that should be the way the Flames are looking to start the year?
Yeah, so I do have that pair together. It wasn't even really a debate in my mind putting them back together, if you will. I don't know if it was just, you know, force of habit. When you're typing out the lines, you're going, okay, Huberdeau, Kadri, and then the first question or the first hesitation I had would be who would be on right wing. But for the sake of kicking things off, yeah, I think you just go right back with Kadri and Huberdeau. We just saw Huberdeau have his most productive season. I know the bar is low, and the first couple of years were what they were, but Jonathan Huberdeau did have a 28-goal season and was the most productive we've seen him in Calgary colors. I just sort of automatically went with the Huberdeau-Kadri duo. I don't know if it was as quick or as instant for you, but from my perspective, it was almost, again, might have been force of habit, but like I didn't even think twice. I didn't even, you know, come to the conclusion of what my lines look like and then go, what if I subbed out Huberdeau, for example, and put player X in his spot instead?
I'm with you. Like it, and it's funny, we had this conversation last year and I asked that question. My answer to myself would have been hell no. Like these guys can't play together.
We saw the experiment. And it didn't work.
For two seasons, it didn't work. Didn't matter if Daryl Sutter was the head coach or Ryan Huska was the head coach. For two seasons, it was like forcing a square peg into a round hole with Huberdeau and Kadri playing together. And then all of a sudden, last year, those two get put together in December at the end of a loss in Pittsburgh. They get put together and basically were together for the rest of the season. And when it was all said and done, Kadri and Huberdeau played over 650 minutes together at 5-on-5. They were pretty productive when they were together. Specifically, you take a look at how things went. Kadri was better with Huberdeau than he was with anybody else or with a lot of other teammates. Same with Huberdeau. Huberdeau's analytics and those types of things were much better together than they were apart. And so, yeah, I take a look at the expected goals together, 51.2%. under 50% for both of them when they were apart. Same with scoring chances, high dangers, all that type of stuff. Better together than apart. For the first time since being here in their three seasons, Huberdeau and Kadri were much better together than they were apart. So then the question becomes, I guess, because pretty clear that you and I are on the same page, Kadri and Huberdeau, the two highest paid forwards on the team, should be together. So then who plays on the right side with them? Who do you have on the right side to start training camp with Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau?
This is where I think perhaps we might get into a little bit of a disagreement, a gentleman's scuffle, if you will.
How about just an interesting conversation?
No, I like scuffling. I put Matt Coronato there. To me, Matt Coronato is your best pure goal scorer on this roster.
Mm-hmm.
He just signed a massive extension. Why not put him immediately on your top line? Have him be that right shot finishing threat with your two other highest goal getters. Maybe that's the argument against what I'm just pitching, but Kadri led the team last year with 35 goals, an NHL career high 35 goals. Huberdeau had 28 goals, his high with Calgary, and Matt Coronato slotted third with 24 goals in 77 games. So I don't know if I'm just putting all my goal scoring options in one basket here and hoping that that trio together can form what we would describe as a true number one line where three guys can flirt with 30 goal potential. I just immediately contract what we saw over the course of the season, the goal scoring totals and how they popped, how I actually like his overall compete and 200-foot game. I just, again, this one I didn't significantly have debates in my head. I went immediately to Matt Coronato.
See, and I went immediately to Matt Coronato on another line. And I just, Backlund, Coleman, Coronato was the most consistent line the Flames had last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Coronato still had the year that he had playing with them. And I think can continue, especially knowing that he's going to be a trigger man on the number one power play. I just think having Coronato play with Backlund and Coleman in Matt's second full NHL season still makes a lot of sense. And, you know, look, last year showed us that what has happened in the past doesn't always mean it's going to predict the future. Case in point, Huberdeau and Kadri were horrible together in their first 2 years and then made a significant difference or a significant change and were much better together in year three. But you take a look at the numbers that Coronato and the analytics, the points, all that type of stuff that Coronato put up with Backlund and Coleman, and then compare it to when he played with Kadri and Huberdeau, which he did play a fair amount of time with at 5-on-5 last year. Like, expected goals with Backlund were last year 53.9%. With Coronato playing with Backlund, they were 48.6%. Playing with Kadri.
Is that natural stat trick?
Yes. So with Kadri, 48.6%. With Backlund, 53.9%. So like almost a 6% swing in terms of expected goals. Same is true with the possession rates. And so I just, because Coronato was so good with Backlund and Coleman, that was the one that I wrote down first. The five things that I wrote down first were Huberdeau, Kadri, Coleman, Backlund, Coronato, with an open spot on the right side of Huberdeau, Kadri, because I just felt like, and this can change, but this is to start the year or to start training camp. This is the way I'd be thinking. I loved that trio so much last year. They were so consistent. Coronato was the trigger man on that line. They play against the top players every single night. They win that possession battle almost every single shift or far more often than not. And you talked about Coronado's 200-foot game. I just think it can be unleashed that much more playing with the number one two-way line. Plus, and the key in this is that Coronado's a really good two-way player. Like, defensively, he's just fine, gets the job done at the one end, and then really paces that line at the other spectrum of the two-way game, and that's on the offensive side of things as he led the team or was right up there in goals last year. So, third on the team in goals when it was all said and done. So, I don't know. I understand, and I think it's a fair argument having your three largest offensive weapons all on a line together, but I just feel Backlund, Coleman, Coronado have got so much built in that that's the way I'd be starting.
Well, and you look at it, and this is, I'm on Money Puck just for the record in case our numbers slightly are varied. But they played 457.9 minutes together, Coleman, Backlund, Coronado. By far the most of any trio for the Flames last season.
Yep.
And Money Pucks even got their expected goals at 54.4, whereas with Kadri and Huberto down to 47.5. So an even bigger swing than natural stat trick has.
And they have very similar but slightly different expected goals formulas. Yeah,
yeah, slightly different methodology. So in saying that, I'm making my argument weaker for having Coronado on that line. But I also look to the past, and there have been times where a player's needed to graduate from Backlund and Coleman and move up, namely Matthew Tkachuk. Matthew Tkachuk with, or was he with Frolik? Sorry.
He was a lot of the times with Frolik before, because Coleman's first year was the first year Lindholm, Tkachuk, and Gaudreau played together. So when Tkachuk spent a ton of time with Backlund, he was mostly with Michael Frolik.
I just think a little
with Mangiapane.
Yes. I just think there comes a time when a young player can graduate from the safety net or the security blanket that a Backlund line provides. And you've signed him to this big deal. Not to say he can't get extra additional minutes on the power play, because I'm sure he's going to be a fixture on PP1. But I do think that at least in training camp, to see if there is something different there this time around, putting your top three scorers all together. We all know how tough Calgary scoring is.
I wouldn't hate it. I honestly think there's plenty of reason to go down that road. It's funny you bring up Tkachuk, because I think of Coronado very similarly. Like, I think it was three seasons Matthew played with Backlund almost exclusively. Yep. And then that quick little change on night one, because Blake Coleman was suspended for what was to be his first ever official game as a member of the Flames. Daryl Sutter puts Elias Lindholm, Johnny Gaudreau, and Matthew Tkachuk together. And they found lightning in a bottle and were the best line in the NHL, or one of the two or three best lines in the NHL that year. And the rest was history for the rest of that season. So
that's not my expectation for Coronado, Kadri, and Huberto.
I get that the methodology is.
Yeah.
I just feel like another year, season and a half, whatever it might be, of Coronado playing with those two guys, Coleman and Backlund, and continuing to hone his all-around game. With, again, just one full NHL season under his belt, I just think he could do potential wonders for Coronado. But I get your line of thinking, too. And honestly, if that's the way Ryan Huska and co. went in mid-September or early October, by the way, when is the NHL schedule coming out? What is going on? Usually it's out like 3 weeks ago. But anyway, I digress. That's the way I'd be thinking. That's kind of where my head would be, at least to start.
If not Coronado, who?
With Backlund and Coleman?
No, with Huberto, Kadri.
Okay, so on my lines that I penned into my
You went old school
notebook that's falling apart. I've got two. I've got Klapka.
Okay.
Because that's probably the way I would start, because he finished so strong, and I would really evaluate into the preseason if Klapka with Kadri and Huberto can still be a thing. Like, Adam Klapka was a bit of a unit in the final month or so of the season.
Oh, absolutely.
That game when Pospisil got hurt in San Jose, where the Flames came back and found a way to win when they were just probably alarmingly outplayed by the worst team in the NHL. All of a sudden, Pospisil gets hurt, Klapka gets bumped onto that line with Kadri and Huberto, and scores almost immediately, and a 2-0 lead was erased very, very quickly. You know, Klapka also had that huge goal when they came back and shocked Colorado on the road. There's just a...
he had 8 points in 10 games down the stretch.
And seemed to fit very nicely with those two guys. So that's probably how I would start. But if through training camp or early in the regular season, it isn't going the way that it went for the final month of the season, final 10 games of the season, then the guy that, I mean, Coronado would be an interesting look. The other guy would be Sharon Govich. And kind of depending on the type of bounce back number 17 has, is Sharon Govich the guy he was two seasons ago, where he's hit 35 goals or 30 goals or whatever it was? Or is he the guy that he was last year, where it was timid and frustrating and he was easy to play against and even that shot wasn't being unleashed at the same, the same frequency and the same danger level, and got a little bit better in the back half of the season. But honestly, Sharangovich was probably the most disappointing player on the team last year. So what is he? And if it is more like year one in Calgary, then I think Sharangovich with Huberdeau and Kadri could be a really interesting fit.
Sharangovich was one of the... My methodology in this was kind of work from the top down. First line, second line, third line, fourth line, which is why I appreciated you revealing your sort of structure where, okay, the first thing you did was put Coleman and Backlund together and then Huberdeau, Kadri, and kind of worked your way around sort of the staples or the pairs. We hear so much about pairing amongst forwards over the course of the last 3, 4, 5 years. Sharangovich was the guy I kind of struggled with. Where would I put him? The fact, like, he did have a disappointing season, but... Hopefully there was some optimism near the tail end of the year. He had, 4 goals and 7 points in his final 8 games down the stretch. Can you take that into the offseason? Can you ride that momentum into training camp and into the regular season in October? I personally am of the opinion that everything resets over the summer. But if you're a vibes guy, and we know Sharangovich is a vibes guy, if you can look back to your last 7 or 8 games of the regular season and go, okay, I started to find it, I'm going to carry that forward, he certainly becomes an interesting member of this picture, because yeah, you can absolutely slot him almost anywhere amongst the top two lines if he's going.
Yeah, and it, so then if you don't have Klapka with Kadri and Huberdeau, because that's one of my big questions, where do you put Klapka? Because if Klapka goes the way things, the Flames would like things to go, and where maybe things were going, or the glimpses he showed you down the stretch, well, all of a sudden we're talking about a guy that, you know, could be that right shot power forward. And all of a sudden those Alexei Protas comparisons that we heard from Ryan Huska as the season went along, they feel a whole lot more realistic. So that one's really interesting to me. And that's why I have him kind of penciled in as at the very least an option I'd be thinking about to start the season, because he was so good to finish last year and they showed some real chemistry. That being said, I wouldn't be forcing it if it doesn't look like it's going to pop through training camp. And certainly once you're into the regular season, if you go a game or two and it's not really working, that would be one of the shortest leash type situations I'd be looking at.
This might cause a little bit of uproar across the table. When I originally did my top four lines, I didn't have a spot for him. Now,
interesting.
Now, let me circle back to this. And now it's tied to how much do you need Lomberg to be an 82-game player? Because as it stands right now, I've got Lomberg, Kirkland, Pospisil as the four. You could very easily slide Pospisil to left wing, Klapka on that line. So you'd have Pospisil, Kirkland, Klapka. Now, let me preface this by saying, yeah, in training camp, you see if Klapka is still a fit with Kadri and Huberdeau. You absolutely do that, especially with how he ended the season. Again, 8 points in 10 games isn't something that should relegate you to the 13th man status. But I like how my lines shape up in the top nine, and I'm a big Lomberg guy. So you either take out Pospisil, you take out Lomberg, or you, personally, the way I started is, you have Klapka as the least experienced member of your top 12 or
remember,
your top 13.
He just signed his,
but
his
he did
first
sign a
one-way
deal,
right?
And it was a 2-year deal as well. So there are plans for him to be able to work his way. I'm just sort of taking the approach of he's got to fight his way back up and steal a spot in the top 12, despite the fact that he played so well down the stretch.
And 1.25 mil, like you were talking about a guy that they
bit of show of confidence.
Yeah, made a little bit of a show of faith in, and with his size, I think growing ability to use that size, and the fact that he's one of two natural right shots that you have on the everyday forward ranks right now, or potential everyday forward
ranks. Yeah, I've only got one right shot in my lineup as it stands right now amongst the forwards.
I think Klapka is going to be a real consideration, and I don't think you sign him to a 2-year deal one way at 1.25 mil per if you don't see him as an NHL regular going into this season.
Okay.
And I think it would be, I think the Flames would be disappointed if he wasn't an NHL regular this season.
So let me ask you this. If he doesn't show the pop that he did at the tail end of last season with Huberdeau and Kadri, where would you have him?
then it becomes a little bit more interesting. I'd probably, for the time being, have him down on the fourth line and probably have a little bit of a rotation on that fourth line, because my line four, I've got on the left side, Lomberg / Pospisil. In the middle, I've got Kirkland, and on the right side, I've got Klapka / Pospisil. So kind of
four
options, very similar kind of fourth line looks. And the one guy that I think could be bouncing or would have the opportunity to bounce from top six into bottom three in that forward group would be Klapka, just depending on what he does. I mean, I go back and listen to his chat with Logan on Sportsnet today a number of weeks ago after he signed. And just listening to him, like, this contract is very similar to what we heard from Kevin Ball when he signed his contract, right? Like, this is not a contract that is going to have a guy like Adam Klapka resting on
his laurels.
It's
not the finish line.
No, this is like, okay, this is a show of faith. Now I got to go out there, put a ton of pressure on myself in a good way to repay that faith. So I'm expecting a pretty in shape and motivated, not to say he hasn't been in shape before, but a pretty in shape and motivated Adam Klapka come training camp. And so he's, I would say, guys that I'm most interested in, he might be at the very top of the list.
And that's not to say if he does start on the fourth line that he can't be elevated over the course of a game. We know that Ryan Huska isn't shy to shake up his lines if things aren't meshing or things aren't going the way that he wants. It also doesn't prohibit him from being a fixture on the second power play unit, if you will, if you want to put him in front of the net and create some havoc there as well. Just the way that I kind of shape my lines, I was like, ooh, okay, for me, if I'm opening night one, this is how I'm going to kind of go about it.
Uh-huh.
And to me, rotating through that fourth line or doing a sort of, okay, you guys are in an open competition, you've got to bring it every night, whether it's game one, game 10, game 40 of the regular season, because somebody else is going to want that spot. I'm okay with that kind of internal competition involving Klapka.
So who do you have with Backlund and Coleman then? If you don't have Coronado there, you don't have Klapka there. So who do you have there?
I have Farabee there.
Okay.
I want to put him in a good spot. A lot can happen over the course of a trade and trying to get settled into a new city, especially if it's the first time you've been dealt. And for Farabee, I feel like he can play that very grindy defensive sort of blend that Backlund and Coleman can bring and insulate. But I do think that that trio together can generate some offense as well, at least hypothetically speaking. It just seemed like a natural-ish place to put him. Also because, to a certain degree, to be perfectly honest with you, didn't know what else to do with him. I don't think putting him on the fourth line to start. Now, granted, this, we have to go through a training camp and guys still have to earn their slotting in the internal competition. But for me, starting him on the third line as opposed to the fourth line just felt like it made more sense as I was doing these lines.
Yeah, Farabee's been a difficult one for me as well. And Farabee and Sharangovich are the most difficult ones for me to place, because Sharangovich isn't my top choice on the right side with Kadri. He's not my top choice on the right side with Backlund, or the left side, because you can move Coleman to the other side because he's pretty versatile that way. And he's not my first choice to put with Frost either. Like, I've got Frost between Zeri and Farabee as kind of my third line. And I guess Sharangovich would be an option. Like, I guess I would add both Sharangovich and Farabee to my fourth line options. It becomes a really interesting,
kind of a good problem. No?
It's not a bad problem, and meritocracy is always good, and having battles and having competitions throughout the year. And as we know, people will get hurt.
Also, yeah, injuries, we're banking on 100% health right now.
I mean, again, like, you go back to number of seasons ago, the way the Gaudreau line with Lindholm and Tkachuk got put together was because Coleman got hurt. I'm sorry, got suspended.
Well, you look back, Rooney and Pelletier getting hurt 2 years ago.
Sharangovich last year. This past year. And Coronado was playing as like a fourth line healthy scratch guy and only really got his spot in the lineup full time once Mantha went down for the season.
Right.
It was Mantha's season-ending knee injury that opened the door for Coronado, and then Matt made the most of it. really good example of one of those, hey, when the opportunity comes, make sure you take advantage of it. And that's exactly what Coronado did. But, you know, injuries will always play a part in this, which will open the door. But right now, Sharangovich, Farabee are really difficult ones to place. And I don't know exactly where I would slot either of those guys. But for now, I've got Frost with Zeri and then one of Farabee or Sharangovich, I guess.
So I've got Frost centering Zeri and Sharangovich is okay. But this will be a semantics thing because I imagine the top three lines are going to be very similar in ice time 5-on-5. I've got Zeri, Frost, Sharangovich as my quote-unquote second line with my Backlund, Coleman, Farabee being the quote-unquote third line.
Can I just ask, how is that always...
How is that a thing?
The Backlund line usually plays the most 5-on-5 minutes together. Like they should not be the third line. From a strict usage standpoint, they should be the first line on most nights. Now, I get why Kadri gets because Kadri's their most offensive center and their number one center, but
yeah.
The Backlund line is never the third line, ever.
I love that passion right there. I just ranked mine based on basically offensive potential. Backlund, Coleman are going to play a ton because they're always playing against the other team's top line. So if you're playing the Edmonton Oilers, yeah, Connor McDavid is going to play 27 minutes a night. Backlund, Coleman is going to see, you know, 17 of those minutes at 5-on-5 with the remaining balance being special teams work. So I'm not arguing with you in the sense of where I just said they're the third line. To me, it's Zeri, Frost, Sharangovich, in theory, have more offensive upside. So, again, but if you went pure 5-on-5 ice team to ice time, you're absolutely right in your assessment that Backlund, Coleman are a de facto top six line.
Just the way
they're... I just go based on offensive potential. Like, scoring line one, scoring line two, checking line fourth line is kind of how I mentally go about this gymnastics experiment.
Yeah, I guess. Backlund averaged 13.49 of 5-on-5 ice time last year. Morgan Frost 12.47. So it's a minute offset. And Kadri and Backlund kind of flip in terms of the most time together.
I just still have that, and I don't know if it's old school or dinosaur thinking, where it's like, okay, your top two lines are your top two scoring lines. Your third line is your checking line or shutdown line. And then your fourth line is your fourth line. It's probably antiquated, but that's how I do it.
Did you think about putting Zeri at center?
No.
I think during training camp, you have to.
Especially in that split squad game, you're going to get an opportunity to need more centers.
And I mean, just don't play. I mean, you still got... six more games after that. Just don't play Frost and Zeri on the same line or in the same game. Put Zeri. I would, until maybe that last preseason game, I would use Zeri and Frost down the middle the entire time at training camp because I think you need to get as much of a look at Zeri down the middle as you can, because I think we're on the same page that once the regular season begins, if everybody's healthy, it's going to be tough for Zeri to be down the middle to start. And so getting him those reps in training camp, I think, is important to evaluate. And also important that, you know, if come November or December, somebody gets hurt and now you need to find somebody to slot into another center ice role, you've got Zeri, who, again, had gotten some decent work in training camp to have under his belt.
The only mini argument I'll have with you there is I think I would save my last two games, depending on how veteran they are, and having Zeri and Frost together so they do get the opportunity to build a little bit of chemistry. But I certainly agree with your thought of get Zeri as much time down the middle as you can, because you're only a Kadri, Frost, or Backlund injury away from needing Zeri down the middle. If Kirkland gets hurt, I don't know if I necessarily immediately go
Zeri there.
Zeri there. I might look more internally to the Wranglers just because I don't want him playing a de facto fourth line role. But if anybody in that top nine, whether it's Kadri, Frost, Backlund, get hurt, Zeri's your first choice of moving somebody to the middle.
So do you have 13 or do you have 14 forwards on your or in your mind when having this conversation?
I have 14. And I say that exasperated.
So our 13th is one of Lomberg, Klapka, Kirkland, or Pospisil. That's the 13th forward. So then who do you have as your number 14?
I'm willing to have this be an open competition, but right now, throughout the year, and I don't know how you're going to feel about this, but I've got Morton as my 14.
I've got Hunt as my 14 if you're going to go that way. I don't even know if they will go 14. They don't have to. Yeah,
especially with the farm team in the same city. Exactly. You don't have as many logistical issues or flight.
Like for most of last year, they went 13-7 all year. I mean, I guess for the first half of the year, they went eight. Yeah, they did go eight defense. And they may do that again. We'll see, especially if we're expecting Parekh. So it might have to be 13 forwards. So of the other guys, the guy that is most suited to be the 14th forward would be Dryden Hunt.
But I can see that.
If Kirkland were to get hurt, or you were looking, if maybe it wasn't working, then Morton would be the guy I'd be looking to step into that role. And the other guy that's going to be really interesting as the year goes along is Cairns. And does Rory Cairns get an opportunity at some point to be an option in this forward group? Like, I don't think I want Cairns playing fourth line.
Or playing every seventh game.
Yeah. So another good year with the Wranglers, another good start with the Wranglers would make a lot of sense. But, you know, if all of a sudden you do run into injury issues or a trade comes up or all of a sudden you're looking to shake things up, even though I don't have Cairns in my 12 to start, he would be one of the top guys that I'd be looking to bring into the equation if you need to. The other three that I wrote down are Hunt, Morton, and Cairns as the three guys. And that's, I know Suni have made his debut in game 82, but I feel like at least a half a season, if not a full year in the American League, might be big for him.
And Eileen Morton, for a couple different reasons, he does have a full year of pro under his belt. He is a center. And he's going to be 26. He turns 26 later this month.
He's an older
player. He's got a lot of experience at the college ranks. And so I don't know how worried you'd be if he only happened to play every fifth, every sixth game. But I value the guy that I have in my reserve here being a center. Having said that, yeah, you're literally across the hallway. I guess it technically wouldn't be a paper transaction. It'd be a real transaction.
And soon you're not having to bring him up. You won't be able to do those things.
Yeah.
So this is the final year where you'll be able to make a recall or an assignment and just be allowed. Oh, no. He definitely was with it. He crossed the hall. He took the drive from Winsport to the Dome for sure. We'll show you the gas receipts if you want.
Here's the speeding ticket he got. No, so in sort of thinking this out and maybe spending too much time on who the 14th forward is on July 7th.
It's July 7th.
If I had a guy that was
time to do it.
If I had a guy that was going to be on my roster for all 82 games as a 14, I'd probably lean more to Hunt. If I got into injury trouble down the middle, then Morton would leapfrog him in that sort of pecking order.
But I do feel like they're going to go 13 the more I
think
about it.
Makes more sense.
And that's perfect because then it allows you to have Dryden Hunt in the American League and potentially be your leading scorer in the AHL. Once again, and a great option to come up and join the group if you need to. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us. Text line's open at 960-960. We'll dive in on the text and start to get your reaction to this conversation when we come back. 960-960 on the text line if you're listening live. Would love to hear from you in terms of where you think this forward group should be going and what it should look like come next season. Text line open if you're listening live at 960-960. Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flamestock is live on Calgary's Hockey Station. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg, Vickers, Monday on Flamestock. We're projecting next year's forward ranks here on Flames Talk. 960-960. Let's get to some text reaction. This from Cole, who says Zeri with Kadri and Huberdeau unless Sharon Govich bounces back. So neither of us had Zeri with those two. Although, again, like to your point, and even going back to last week when we had our big Zeri conversation, he remains unsigned. But your assertion was, and I don't really disagree with it, is that prior to the injury in January, the Drew Helison hit against Anaheim, he might have been one of their two or three most dynamic offensive players. And you kind of were using the same type of logic as to why you had Coronado penciled in with Kadri and Huberdeau. could be an all right fit for Zeri if Klapka doesn't work or Coronado doesn't work or Sharon Govich doesn't work. Putting Zeri there, I don't mind it. It's just not the way that I would start things.
Now, how do you feel about Zeri on the right versus on the left? Is that a wash for you? Do you prefer him on the left?
I think I probably prefer him on the left, but as an option to play on the right side, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I mean, for some guys, Matthew Tkachuk had his breakout season because in a lot of ways he got put on the right side. So, you know, maybe it opens up things a little bit, a little easier to cut to the middle when you're playing on your off wing. And Zeri really likes to cut to the middle. And I hope that the injury that he sustained doesn't make him
less ambitious.
A little bit less inclined to cut to the middle because he's very good at doing it, and he's very dynamic and shifty with the puck, so he can open up a lot of things, passing lanes, shooting opportunities when he does so, and you have a little bit more of a lane to do so when you're playing on your off wing. So I don't mind Zeri as a potential look on the right side anyway.
Well, he's previously had chemistry with Kadri as well. Now, that was from the left side, not the right side, but for me, I think it's easier to jump left to right than it is from wing to the middle or middle back to the wing. So I don't necessarily think it should be a huge hindrance, although it does change the way you're able to see the ice. And perhaps it maybe even elevates the playmaking a little bit as well, because if you've got your stick to the inside, you're always looking to your left as opposed to the right. So maybe it helps in that sense.
Derek in Okotoks says, on this conversation, what rookie do you think you could pencil into that top line? They've got a lot of ambitious young players ready to make a name for themselves. Who could that be? I don't know if there is anybody that I would point to that would be a quote-unquote rookie that would be a natural fit there on that right side. I mean, I think down the road, players like Basha or Gridden are really interesting potential names that you could see being in that top six as a winger. Like, I think Matvei Gridden projects as a top six winger in the NHL. I think if everything goes according to plan, and listening to Basha when he joined us last week, even there's still a lot of untapped potential with the 2024 second round pick. So those are guys down the road. I just don't know if right now there's anybody that would point to and say, yeah, that guy's ready to jump in and play on the right side of Nazem Kadri.
Yeah, I think he's going to need at least 1 year of seasoning with the Wranglers, but Suniev would be a guy with his shot.
That's an idea that I might have. I should have added Suniev. That's a good one.
I wanted to pick one you hadn't said.
I like that.
Teamwork.
That would be a good third option for sure. Not even third option, but another option to add to those two. TJ in Cardston says, I think going to the Worlds is going to be a huge confidence boost for Klapka moving forward. And you were there. You saw that he was not, I don't even say that as a joke.
You said it, not me. I just, hey, that's, I'm where my mind goes now.
But you tracked him. He was not even in the lineup to begin with. And then
he wasn't even rostered.
Yeah, exactly. And then he got in and he gradually got a little bit more playing time. And then it drop back down as more players entered the lineup, but he had that one really big game and
3 points, two goals, against Kazakhstan.
Solid all-round world championships based on it being the first time he's represented his country at that level.
Well, and there's a lot of excitement from the Czech Federation, if you will, about Klapka's potential, whether it be coaches, whether it be potential teammates. Like the NHL guys I spoke to about Klapka, not non-Flames teammate NHL guys, were well aware of what he did down the stretch for the Flames.
Yep. This reads, a nice piece of this conversation you're having is that you're struggling to find spots for mid-20s players with potential to pop as opposed to figuring out where Brandon Boldig or Tanner Glass fit. That is fair.
Well played.
And I mean, honestly, those types of players we kind of have either on the fourth line or on the outside looking in right now.
Yeah, the role that those guys filled. Well, what would Boldig have been like 8 years ago? Is that even too recent?
He got traded to Calgary at the 2014 draft because I remember.
So we're talking a decade.
That was the Bennett draft. So that was the Philadelphia draft. He got traded to Calgary. And then his first year was the Find a Way Flames year.
Yeah. So they are few and far between. I'm going to excuse Lomberg from that because he can fight, certainly, but he plays an energy role and he's willing to back it up. But to me, there's a difference between putting Boldig over the ice for 8 minutes a night and putting Lomberg over the boards for 8 minutes a night, to the degree that I don't think Bolig was going to be a guy that was ever going to be able to, with his lack of foot speed, pressure a defense, whereas Lomberg can get in and disrupt on the forecheck a little bit and be more of an energy player, whereas Bolig, to me, and even to a lesser degree, Tanner Glass, was, you're pretty much only getting the physicality out of them.
Tanner Glass fought some tough guys. Didn't he fight Lucic?
He fought Lucic after Lucic ran Mike Smith. And I'll never forget Mike Smith post-game. Where he's like pretty, that was Tanner Glass. I think he had just been called up, probably played 4 minutes that game. And Mike Smith kind of under the bust a few teammates.
Mike Smith under the bust, guys, when he was here? No, he never did that.
Just saying.
No,
that's not a conversation for another day.
He never threw his teammates under the bus.
He was appreciative of Tanner Glass, though.
I digress. John says, if I missed it, my bad, but neither of you have Zeri at center. I don't want to see the Bennett mistake again. As of right now, I don't have Zeri at center. I had a Thursday night at the Wild Horse. A gentleman and another gentleman had a very heated, about 2-hour conversation about Connor Zeri and where he fits and what his contract is.
You gotta love it.
That I was party to. And so one of the guys, his last name might rhyme with Tinder. So yeah. And you know how you know who that
leak out?
If you know who that is, you may know that he can extend an argument infinitely. This reads, but as of right now, can Zeri play center? Yes. Is he best suited to be a center in the NHL? I'm not sure. That's why I think using him there in training camp is important. But as of right now, I don't have him as one of the top three centers. But I do have him in my top three lines, just being on the wing.
Yeah, and he would need to supplant a top nine center, whether that's Kadri, Frost, or Backlund. To me, it doesn't make sense using Zeri in a fourth line role down the middle.
Same text says, when does Zeri get to play center? There's some Sam Bennett comparables there. I don't think we're at that point yet. I think already Zeri has been handled differently and frankly better than Bennett was at this stage of Bennett's career. So I'm not really all that worried about it going that direction yet. This is an interesting question. With Karens needing waivers for the first time, does that force the team to keep him as a 14th forward? Do you risk losing him?
I feel like there's probably going to be about 20 to 25-ish Rory Karen types that hit waivers.
Yeah.
It just happens every year if you get it at the right time where we see literally 150 players hit the waiver wire in a span of 48 hours. I think you got to risk it. I don't think you necessarily... And now, if he shows in training camp that he's ready to
different
take a
story,
top
right?
13 spot, then yeah, absolutely. If you earn it, you get it. And that this isn't to say that he can't earn it over the course of training camp. But I don't know if... Would you like to keep him? Absolutely. Do you force that situation, that scenario, and keep him on the NHL roster and then consider the fact that maybe he doesn't play regularly? Now you're just stunting his growth as well, which is going to, at the end of the day, sort of inhibit what his potential could be. I personally would worry about losing him, but I wouldn't let that dictate what I do with him.
This has two players with something to show, Klapka and Sharon Govich. And it's a little bit of the reaction to our conversation on this one at 960-960. Later on this week, we'll do the same between the pipes. We'll do the same on the blue line and how things look there. Slightly easier exercise this summer because honestly, the Flames are a very, very similar team compared to where they were last year. Next to no changes when it comes to regular players thus far.
Personnel is the same, but I look at the roster. Zeri has something to prove. Frost has something to prove. Sharon Govich has something to prove. Farabee has something to prove. Klapka has something to prove, and to a degree, Kirkland and Pospisil as well.
It's Steinberg Vickers. Thanks to Shan and Cam, our outstanding producers this hour. And this hour of Flames Talk has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe with wireless keypad solutions so you can control access to your home wherever you are. For more information, visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.